truthfully, what happens is, as children grow up, we start to educate them progressively from the waist up. And then we focus on their heads, and slightly to one side.
I think in the old days, you know, you were better off. Because nowadays, they're all specialists. Everyone's becoming better and better, and less and less. And eventually, someone's going to be superb at nothing.
Our education system has mined our minds in the way that we've strip-mined the earth for a particular commodity. And for the future, it won't serve us. We have to rethink the fundamental principles on which we're educating our children.
We're not here to tell everybody that they're wrong and we're right. We're not saying that we have all the answers, but we'd like to present a different way of looking at it.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to episode 4 of China Jedication. Another exciting pod for you coming up. We have another special guest with me today. None other than Mr. Brian Back.
Hello, everyone. Hey, can we just change the name of it from 4 to, like, 3B?
Yes. Yes, because 4 is unlucky.
4 is terrible.
Absolutely, yeah. So right.
Episode 3B.
Episode 3B. Yes, the hospital where my wife, where we've had both of our babies, and another one soon too, they don't have a fourth floor. It's 3B we have the baby.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, very well. I apologise for that.
No sweat.
Very insensitive. So, Brian, could you just tell our listeners, what's your current position in the education field?
Sure. I am the international principal here in the Sanya Foreign Language School, in the international school here in Sanya. So basically, I sort of run the school.
You do indeed, and quite a few schools. I mean, we're here now in Sanya, and Sanya, for the listeners, is on an island of Hainan, which is in the far south of China.
As beautiful as China gets. It's lovely.
And the cleanest air as well. If you look on your pollution apps, it's like, well, it's like 24 today or something.
When I lived up in the north, I checked it every day, and I actually deleted the app from my phone because
yes.
I don't care.
Well, they say knowledge is power, but it's also, knowledge is pretty depressing, isn't
yes.
it, sometimes, too? Yes, indeed. Because Jiuhai, we're around 100, maybe 70 to 100 every day. They say below 50 is really where you need to be.
Oh, we would hit 400 up in Tianjin. It was miserable.
That is despicable.
Bad. Yeah, bad.
Now, I guess a lot of people would be asking, listening to this, how did you get to come down to Sanya? How did this open up? How long have you been in Sanya, this tropical island?
This is my third year here at the school, and before I was here, I was up in Tianjin. I was the principal at an American high school, and I was working in the school there, and the work was, it was very busy. It was a lot of, we were opening schools in Nanjing, and we were looking at one in Beijing, and I was split, and I was traveling, and I have little kids. And I wanted to spend my time with my family. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to travel. And so when we came down to Sanya on a vacation, and my wife said, hey, there's a school down here. And I thought, well, this would be a perfect place to raise the kids. I grew up in Florida in America, mm-hmm. Surfing and scuba diving. And I want my kids to love the ocean. So when a job opened up down here that was not a principal job, I thought, okay, so it's a bit of a pay cut and it's a bit of a demotion.
Yeah.
But it's a lovely place to live, and so I came down, and I spent the first half a year, kind of working as the director of ESL, so building up the ESL program here. And then towards the end, our principal left, and then the board said, all right, Brian, and they handed me the baton. And so I ended up in this this lovely office surrounded by plants, and I've been here since.
And holding the baton very well, I would say.
I need the baton to beat people away from me, yes.
Now, wonderful as that story is, what brought you across to the shores of China? And when was that?
So I originally came to China in 1999 when I graduated from university. I graduated as a teacher, and I met somebody in the university who had come to China as an English teacher. And I thought, what else am I going to do? I was literally fighting between these two ideas. One, I was going to go to an island in the south of Florida and teach in a small school. Huh. Or two, I could come to China. And I thought, well, I'm young. I've got nothing but student loans. Mm. So why not go overseas? And so I spent 99, 2000, 2001 up in the north of China at a university. A fresh graduate from college teaching in a university, which is pretty standard issue introduction into China. And so I spent 2 years up there in the university, and then I met my wife in the States, moved back to the States and then lived there for a couple of years and then came back about 5 or 6 years ago.
And that was with your kids then, yeah, that you had the kids, but...
No kids until... So I met my wife, we got married, we had kids 5 years after we were married, and then we came to China when they were five. So when the oldest was three. Nobody cares. I don't know.
Well,
I've got some children. And
I tell you, and you're just as mad as me because you got three.
Yes.
And I guess you're stopping there, are you?
Yes. I've got twins. The boys are twins. The two youngest are twins. And when we found out, that's when we stopped. We literally pulled the plug, and that's it. So.
Oh, sounds painful, pulling the plug. Okay, so I want to wind back the years even more then, from before your time coming to China.
Okay.
And I want to go back to when you were a little boy, and you were being educated in a school. Tell us about that. What was that like? Where was it?
Okay, so I grew up in Florida, and Florida, very warm, it's semi-tropical, grew up by the ocean, and I will confess that I was not a good student. In fact, I wasn't a good student I was probably a good student in elementary school, bad student in high school, terrible student in high school, bad student in university, and then it wasn't until I went back for graduate studies that I actually really applied myself very hard as a student. So I would say that as a kid growing up, I was not a good student, and I was not I wasn't really pushed by anyone, certainly not by my family. And then I think it was easy to kind of write me off as from teachers' point of view. And I think that's one of the reasons that I became an educator, because I know how important education can be to the life of a child. And I would like to help kids avoid the same paths that I ended up on. And so that's one of the reasons that I became a teacher.
But did you like school?
No, I did not like school. When, from what I remember, I did not like school as an older student. I think when I was a little kid, I liked school just fine. And then as I got into maybe sixth grade up, it was a downhill.
Really? Okay. Yeah, because we all have our unique experiences. I loved school. I'd love to go back.
Oh, really?
Maybe that's why I am back.
Maybe.
To teach.
Trying
to get back. Yeah. Wonderful. So, Florida, when you were growing up in Florida, did you have to worry about alligators in school? Do they have, like, alligator education classes?
Not in school, but we could find an alligator simple enough.
Pretty much, yeah?
Oh, yeah. You could just go out to the... mother alligators make a noise, and I'll make the noise, but...
yes, please.
Mother alligators make a noise... And they call their babies to them. And so, babies make a noise that call their mothers to
right.
them. And so you can go out on a dock where you know there are alligators, and you can make this noise, and the alligators will come over to the dock. And alligators are not aggressive, pretty typically. Crocodiles are aggressive, but alligators are pretty chill, and if you get up on one, provided that it's not trying to eat you or your dog, they'll just go away.
Well, indeed.
so not terrifying, but oh, the noise they go. Ow, ow, ow. I don't know, stupid noise. But if you go out to a dock and you make that noise, and there are alligators in the water, they'll come over and
So your mum or dad, when you said, "Oh, I'm just going out to play in the backyard," you said, "Brian, you can't run the alligators."
Yep.
That's what that movie said. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, alligators in the rivers, alligators in the ponds, alligators. Yeah.
Okay, so you might not have liked school. What about uni? Where did you go for uni? Where was that? What did you study?
I went to a small private Christian school called Johnson, and I studied. I have a twofold degree: one major in elementary education, so I wanted to do teaching, and my history is sordid and strange.
Did you say sordid?
Yeah, it's just a strange, sordid history.
I'm sure not.
I have a double major in my undergrad. The second major was Bible. So I have a major in Bible and a major in elementary ed. So a teacher, something useful, and then something not so useful, Bible.
Okay. I never knew you could get a degree in Bible.
You can. Maybe you're going to move on to be a preacher or a pastor.
Right, okay.
And part of my long sort of history is there's some pastoral stuff in my history. And so I actually spent about 8 years in a church doing a children's ministry. So I ran I ran a children's program for about 300 kids and their families, a mega church up in Minnesota, and ran that program for about 7-8 years.
Oh, a long time.
Yeah, I loved it. But back to my sordid history, now I am an atheist, I'm no longer a Christian.
Okay.
And so that's a good reason to leave the church.
Well, I would say, yes, absolutely. Yeah. good move there.
Yeah, so that's part of how we came back to China. You know, the fallout from leaving the church with a capital C, you know, no longer being a Christian or a believer. Then what do you do as someone who's worked in sort of the religious field for that many years? So coming back to China was something we always wanted to do, and my wife was super cool, and she's still super cool, and so we came over.
Wonderful. I mean, okay, this might be a cliche, but everyone has a favorite teacher.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, my favorite teacher.
Excellent.
And my favorite teacher would be Mr. Denneke. Mr. Denneke. He was sixth grade English. And I had a special seat in his class, which
was that because you weren't very good?
It's because I was not very good. It was more of a cage than a seat. It was next to his desk, but there was a partition so that
VIP, right?
Yeah, so he didn't have to look at me, and I could still see out. But yeah, it was a special seat. But I liked Mr. Denneke because even though I was a goofball. And wasn't the most focused kid in his class. It almost felt like he never gave up on me as a student. And I came from a long history of being easy to give up. I'm fairly smart, but I don't. As a kid, I didn't channel my energy into something productive, and that caused more problems than anything good. And so it wasn't really until I sort of the end of university, moving into China, that I started to kind of channel that into something good. And so I come from a long history of maybe feeling like I was given up on, and maybe that's one of the reasons that I'm so tenacious as an educator or as a leader in the education field. I don't want to give up on students. I don't want to give up on teachers. I don't want to give up on institutions, maybe even when they deserve being given up on.
So Mr. Denneke was an elementary, he's a homeroom kind of teacher.
He was the English teacher. I don't remember exactly how it works. And if I were to police sketch a picture of him, I'm sure it would look nothing like him. I think he had glasses. But the feeling that I have from him is something that I try to recreate in the school. Chris has been here for a day now. We've walked around the school, and something that I pride myself on in the school is being able to talk to kids. Like, I'm the principal. I'm the big dog on campus. But there's not a kid here who's afraid to come up and talk to me, or there's not a kid here that I won't rub their head. I genuinely care about the kids who are here, and I think they know that. And so that's something that I want them to know, is that, you know, despite everything that goes on around them, that I'm really someone who will not give up on them.
Yeah, I attest to that. I mean, we had lunch yesterday, and a lot of children came up and said, "Hey, what do they call you?"
Hey, Mr. Brian.
Yeah,
that's it.
Mr. Brian. Good stuff. So, what about you as a teacher then? I know you don't teach now because you've got a lot of things to be doing, putting out various fires and working on building lots of things in lots of places here with this school. What did you used to teach? Or can I say, you know, what's your favorite subject you like teaching?
I've done everything from fourth grade in the States to high school in American high school to sort of all kinds of elementary things, and then teaching parents, parenting things. That's been, and then university students, and then here. And there as a teacher of teachers. And one of the things that I sort of have always thought was that as a teacher, you get to influence the lives of the kids that you're with. So you get 30 kids, and you get to change their lives. And that's a really cool thing. And one of the things that I tell myself as admin, or when I'm teaching teachers, is that I get to really multiply that. So I get to take those 30 teachers and teach them something that will change how they interact with their kids. And so now, instead of just 30 kids, it's exponential, the amount of effect that you can have on people. And so that's something that really makes me happy, and it's one of the things that I tell myself when I go, why do I do this? I do this because while it doesn't feel the same as being in a classroom, it certainly can have the same influence as being in a classroom. And so that's as far as my favorite age or my favorite subject to teach. I have a fondness for literature. I have a fondness for communication. And I like that, and I would say literature or just communicating is something that I really appreciate. Age wise, I don't care. You know, I like little kids that are silly and fun, and you can play with them, and you can say silly things, and I like the older kids when they're so. They think that adults don't know anything. I like there's, you know.
Well, they're right, aren't they?
They're just discovering that, and that's something adults, you know. Oh, you think you know everything, but the truth is nobody knows anything, and the kids are right. The adults don't know anything, but we have to keep up appearances and say, yeah, no, we know everything. So, otherwise, they'll take over and they'll kill us. So.
Well. Talking of styles, what would be your kind of teaching style? Or I guess now principally teaching style.
I appreciate the Socratic method. I appreciate the idea that everybody brings something unique to the table. And that today we had a leadership meeting with all the leaders in the school, and we do it every Thursday. And I'll start the meeting out with a kind of an analogy. And the analogy today, we were talking about, I grew up surfing, I care about surfing, I love the ocean. And we talked about how rip currents work in the ocean. And I explained what a rip current was and how to avoid drowning in one, and how even the best swimmers still cannot fight the ocean. Mm. And then I just talked about rip currents and how that works. And then the question was, how does that apply to the school? And so the true answer is I don't know. It applies to everyone a little bit different. Mm. And how it applies to a teacher is going to be different than how it applies to the head of the teaching department, and how it applies to the head of logistics, and how it applies to finance. But the common thread there is that it applies to everyone. Everything applies to everyone. You just have to think about it. Mm. And being able to kind of take a step out of what where you're at and look at things from a different way, or look at other people's perspectives, or hear how something, the same thing, influences someone else. I think that's sort of my my style. It's more of a put something out there and let people chew on it to get out of it what they can get out of it, instead of giving them what I want to get out of it, because the people will always get more out of it by themselves than they'll get by me giving it to them. I think that's true.
Let's go more into the classroom, if you don't mind.
Sure, sure.
Talk about discipline, because this is a big thing talked about, you know, managing the classroom for teachers, especially in international classrooms, lots of diversity, things like this. What's your philosophy, as even when you're a teacher, even now as a principal, when it comes to discipline?
So when it comes to classroom management, how that works, this is something that we talk a lot about as teachers and staff, and mm. how do you make it go? Some teachers use systems like a Classroom Dojo. That's a fairly popular system.
Yeah, it's Class Dojo.
Yeah, it's a website that you click
on. For the younger
on.
Ones.
Yeah. Some classes use like a class constitution, where they sit down with their class and they build out, you know, how are we going to do things? What are we going to do? What are the consequences to doing something?
Yeah.
What I believe about classroom management is that kids genuinely want to do good. They want the approval of other people, and the way to manage the classroom is to, one, be interesting. Make your classes interesting. That will help the kids from going off script.
Great.
Two, be positive. When say you've got 30 kids in your classroom, and you've got six of them who are misbehaving, and you've got one who is sitting right. Instead of going after those six kids mm. and saying, Johnny, sit up. Billy, do this.
Yeah.
Tommy, do this. Janet, don't do that. Just go to the one and say, man, Kevin, you are sitting so nicely. And I love the way when I talk, you are just looking at me. And the kids around Kevin will naturally be drawn to that. And so being positive in the classroom, that's a huge deal. Not using negative, we talk about this all the time, not using negative rules. So something like, you know, back to Billy. I think Billy was the bad kid in the last thing. Billy throws a thing on the ground, a piece of trash on the ground. You say, Billy, don't throw the trash on the ground. And so Billy is a smart ass, so Billy balls it up and he puts it in his desk. And then you say, Billy, don't put it in your desk. And Billy takes it out of his desk and puts it in his neighbor's book. And you say, Billy, don't put it in your neighbor's book. And because you're using a negative rule, Billy, don't do this. Every negative rule has a positive rule that can correlate to it. Something like, Billy, put your trash in the trash can.
Yeah.
And now you don't have Billy doing 300 things because Billy's going to wear you down, because that's Billy's job. You don't have Billy doing 300 things that are going to kill you. You've just given Billy one thing to do, put it in the trash, and Billy knows what the trash is, and you know, and everybody knows, and Billy does that.
Yeah, he's been taught. Yeah,
yeah, and so to use positive rules instead of negative rules, like don't slouch. Well, that's a negative rule. So the kid doesn't slouch, but the kid's laying on the ground. No, don't lay on the ground. Now the kid's standing on his head. And so the positive rule there is just sit properly, and now we have a positive rule that covers a multitude of negative rules, and it's so much quicker and easier. And so I like positive rules in the classroom. I think teachers should be interesting. That's the number one thing for classroom management. If your classes are interesting, and if you have a good rapport with the kids, that's going to cut down most classroom management things there. And the rest of it's just nuances. Like, walk around when you're teaching. Don't stand in one place, but walk around. And if Johnny is not paying attention, just touch Johnny on the shoulder. You don't have to stop your class and say, Johnny, stop this. Just touch Johnny on the shoulder as you're walking around the classroom and bring Johnny's focus back to you, opposed to stopping what you're doing. That's the second tier of once you're interesting and once you've got a good rapport, then you can do all these. Then you use Classroom Dojo, and then you use walking around, and then you use all the other things that it makes it simpler.
Fantastic. Thanks for that, Brian. I guess if Billy was standing on his head, I might have to positively reinforce that. It's pretty impressive and slightly painful. Now, China. We're over in China. What's your biggest challenge been so far? And I know we have lists, but your biggest one, in a nutshell, lay it on the line.
I think that I'm over a lot of the little things that will get you in China.
You want your big one? Big.
My big one is, I guess I've doubled back to really not understanding the culture. I've gone from a place where I didn't understand the culture, and that was frustrating, to a place where I thought I understood the culture. Now I'm at a place where I think I understand the culture well enough to operate within the culture, but there are still little hooks that grab me sometimes. And I understand that we're going to be indirect, and so I'm going to be indirect. And I think, okay, I'm being really indirect with this. Why isn't it working? And so I've gone from not understanding to what I think I understand to back to where I think, man, what I understood, I don't really understand. And I feel that's probably my biggest thing is, I think I know how it works. I should know how it works. And I'm having, sometimes I think I do, and it just comes out wrong, and I don't understand it. I know all the little things that you need to know, like, don't have your phone number be 444. That kind of, don't flip a fish over at dinner. Don't give a clock. Don't give your friend a pear. All those little things that you learn as you're acclimating. And I think I understand it, but then something that I think I understand just comes back and bites me, and I think, how did I? Why isn't this working? And then it's completely frustrating.
Yeah, you know, a thing that came to me, the analogy was, Billy was doing this and doing that, and he was saying not to say, don't do this, don't do that, Billy. And what we came up with, what you came up with, was what you need as a teacher to show them the way.
Sure.
Don't do this, don't buy a clock, do this instead. And of course, for all of us here, we don't have that, really, as expats here. And we have friends and maybe wives that are from here, or husbands, and we have to take advice and listen. But I totally get what you're saying, and I think a lot of people who've been in China for a while would definitely understand what you're saying. It's quite hard to sum up. It's very subtle.
Yeah, and you learn. I guess it's just ineffable.
Yeah.
It's the ineffability of China.
Right, well, I tell you what, on a positive note, we finished China Dedication podcasts with a teacher's tip. A recipe for success if you want to compete. So, principal, teacher, give us your big tip for all those teachers out there, maybe want to be principals too. A good tip to take home.
First tip is don't become a principal. That's a suck job.
Okay, let's cut the pod there, shall we?
Yeah, that's a big one. I think one of the things that is really useful is that everyone is really different, and kids are different, teachers are different. Everybody has their unique things that they can bring to the table, and there's something that you can learn from everyone, even when it feels like there's nothing this person can teach you. There's something you can learn from them, and so I think that really trying to cater to the differences of people and the uniqueness of people, to let them use their gifts in the classroom, or their gifts in the classroom as a student, or their gifts in the classroom as a teacher, finding those things where they really, really shine, and having them do that. And I'll give you an example of something last year that I had a teacher do. So I got a teacher. The teacher loves Dungeons and Dragons. All right. I don't know anything about Dungeons and Dragons, but some of your listeners will know. And
Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. Do you know anything about it?
It's like a dice game.
Role playing.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're going to dress up as elves and slay dragons. So he's really good at this, and a decent teacher. And what he did was he combined his knowledge and love of this Dungeons and Dragons with teaching, and he created a Dungeons and Dragons unit in his classroom. But he didn't call it Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
He called it Dinosaur Island. And so he took all of the things that he was doing in the classroom, the math that he was doing in the classroom, the science he was doing, the English, the Chinese, all of the everything that was going on in the classroom, and he built this thematic unit, for lack of a better idea, around dinosaurs, where he dropped the kids off on this island, and the kids had to find their way off the island using strategies that they had learned in the math class. So they're learning base 10 something, so they've got to solve these base 10 puzzles to unlock a door that frees a gun that keeps them from being eaten by a dinosaur. And the whole thing was every day they would play this thing, and it was just like the end of the day unit kind of. And it was such a cool thing to watch and experience. The kids just loved it. And it was him using his unique gifts and talents in that area to really solve something that only he could do.
Mr. Brian Back, principal at Sanya Language School and the International School, thanks for being on China Jedication.
Absolutely happy to do it.
And let's keep in touch.
Absolutely.
If you enjoy listening to the China Jedi podcast and want to get involved, either by asking a question, expressing your opinion, good or bad, light or dark, or even appearing as a special guest, then get in touch by emailing our team at info@chinajedi.com. That's info@chinajedi.com.